Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Bhutang dhammang sanghang namassami. Well, I only just got back yesterday afternoon after having been away for a little over 2 weeks, and I was asked to say a few words about what's been happening in my life since I went away. I have to say first that my mind's in a no man's land at the moment, having having not quite left Devon, where I've been visiting, and reluctant to get lost in the complexities and involvements of a large community. So, still, there's no hurry, there's plenty of time. No one's going anywhere. This is the time of the year where I often like to get away somewhere. To be somewhere different, to have a break, to experience a different pace of life. And then I usually come back and appreciate where I'm living all the more. And usually I wait until just after a Waisak. However, this year I thought I'd experience Waisak somewhere else. And I lived in Devon for 2 years up till 2005. And I thought it was quite healthy and impressive to see so many new people at the, so many new faces that I didn't recognize at the Waisak gathering in Devon. And there were maybe 80 or more. And of these, I only recognized 6 or 7 people. So I felt encouraged that to see change. I thought it was very healthy to see new supporters coming without thinking, oh, where did the old supporters go? Just having a healthy appreciation for change. So I've been asked to account for what I've been doing for the last 2 weeks, rather than give you a detailed blow-by-blow account of what exactly happened. I'd rather share with you some impressions that stay with me. One of the things that struck me anew was picking up an old book which I'd read many years ago. And then I don't know if you are like me in that you can often see something new in a book When you pick it up a few years later, you think, oh, I didn't realize that. I thought I understood what this book was all about. Only to discover, to your delight, that there was some detail, some very minor detail that lends a completely new twist to the book that you thought you were completely familiar with. When I was at the Devon Vihara, I picked up Ajahn Buddhadasa's Heartwood from the Bow Tree. And I thought, oh yes, of course, I'm familiar with this. It would be nice to read this again. And I did very quickly. And it was quite nice to be reminded of all these different levels of emptiness. And fortunately, I can't remember their names, so I won't be elaborating on, I think there were 5 or 6 or 7 levels of emptiness. But there was, right on the last page, there was a footnote that had something to say about the nature of the heartwood of the bow tree. Now, most of you regard me as fairly knowledgeable about trees. So, if you talk about the heartwood, well, it's the hardest part of a tree. Well, that's the impression. That's what I'm led to believe. The heartwood, it's the... you can misread it and say, oh, it's the hardwood. It's the very core of a tree. It's what these pillars are made of. Otherwise, there wouldn't be anything to hold the temple up. But for a bow tree, apparently, there's just empty space. There's no hard wood. And that's the virtue of the Bodhi tree. It's even the Bodhi tree is empty. It's just a simile, of course, but the whole of Ajahn Buddhadasa's teaching in his book is about emptiness. And I feel it's important to understand exactly what it's empty of. There's no point. It's no good, really. Well, in my understanding, it's no good just talking about emptiness. It becomes such an abstract thing, unless you know what it's empty of. If you have any understanding of what Ajahn Buddhadasa is getting at in his teachings, not just in this little book, but as he advocates, as he says, of the Buddha's teaching, that he says something to the effect like every teaching that the Buddha gives is about, it's pointing to realizing the emptiness of self. So with that in mind, I find that a useful theme to investigate every time I go away from this place and seeking solitude somewhere, be it on a walk. Or elsewhere. Uh, often when I find myself going away somewhere else, I'm frequently asked, as I was on this trip, "Oh, Gandasuno, is there any gossip from Amaravati?" And I think for the first time, without exaggeration, for the first time, I found myself quick-witted enough to say, "Well, do you know, I'd left it behind." It's so easy, even when one wants to get away from a place, to bring it with you. You know what I mean? In no time at all, one's been lured into talking about the very place, the problems, the people, the intricacies, the complexities of where one's been living. I don't recall making any special strong determination not to speak of this place, but just this once I found myself on the ball enough not to fall for the temptation of gossip, and that was very satisfying because I knew that although it's very entertaining, can be very entertaining to share your stuff, something that you know that others don't know, fall for the temptation of gossip. At the end of my 2 week stay, I did go for a walk down to the coastline, and I find immersing oneself in nature just to get by a day without food, suffer a little hardship, can be very beneficial just to go out and experience some uncertainty. Of course, one can plan so much. One of the practices we have in the Sangha is what we call Tudong, and that is to go wandering in the countryside, living on faith, not knowing quite where we're going to sleep the night, or what the weather is going to be, or where the next meal will come from. And the purpose of this practice, which is undertaken more extensively in Thailand, is, well, the literal meaning is, I believe, is to cast off, to throw off. To throw off. I can't quite remember what it is to throw off, but it's very, very liberating to throw off. To throw off this this state of mind that this sense of anxiety, and to live on faith. The nearest we practice that is going on Pindapat to the local town here. And it's very, very uplifting to see that often we are quite well supported. But Tudong to cast off this mind of anxiety, that which is constantly preoccupied with the making our lives safe and certain. Now, what I noticed is that walking in the countryside, and even for a few days, in this frame of mind of living in uncertainty, enhances one's ability to just stay in the present. Of course, I have a plan of where I'm going to start and where I'm going. But what I notice is that if I have any sense of anxiety about getting to a certain destination by a certain time, that takes me out of the moment and actually spoils my enjoyment of what I'm doing. It spoils my enjoyment of the moment, and it's not peaceful. But if I can just practice with being where I am with each step, then this is peace. Without making an effort to go aside, to be by oneself, I find it's very easy to forget and to lose the very purpose for which we come into this life. There are so many aspects of Sangha life, community living, which we can have ideas, views and opinions around. And before we know it, we can become quite emotionally invested or stirred up with genuine concerns and anxieties about where the community is going, or whether it's been successful, or what the future is, or what happened in the past. And I've seen all these tendencies in myself. And what I notice is that every time I recollect a part of my history associated with the Sangha, or different communities around the country, or you know, what happened in this particular time in my monastic career, all the calamities, all the disasters that happened to me, well, that's how I remember it, many scenarios. And I There's always a sense of self there. There's always a sense of self, and very often preoccupied with what other people thought of me then, and how other people think of me now. But to note, I find it's very valuable to note the sense of self that arises, and then the sense of self-concern. There's always some anxiety there. And it's not peaceful. Note that when you find yourself unhappy or disturbed or upset, there's often a strong sense of self there. Halfway through the walk I'd planned, because I did actually want to have a decent lunch. Halfway through my walk, I had arranged to meet one of the monks and I was very grateful to have a very sensible sandwich lunch. So then the walk continued through the undercliffs to Lyme Regis. It is the same undercliffs that I spoke of last year, but it's the first time I'd actually walked the whole length during the summer. And it's quite a winding path. Even though it's only 6 miles long, you still need most of the afternoon to get through. So after having spent a blissfully peaceful day in solitude walking along the coastline, I was grateful to have some companionship, but I noticed how the conversation inevitably turned towards community life, monasticism, history, past, all the sort of inevitable regurgitations of the past, and then suddenly it wasn't so peaceful. And so out of that, the contrast of experiencing the silence of being on one's own and then engaged in conversation, it struck me how it was more valuable to actually to realize harmony, to find harmony in oneself, than to seek perfection in others or in the place where we live or just look how easy it is to find ourselves focusing on the faults of others or how a community is run, for example, or very, very strong tendency in many of us, I think. Because perfection is it's an ideal. It's only an ideal that we have, even of ourselves. So I do find going away, having a completely different environment to live in for a while, very helpful to remind me of the purpose of this life. That is ultimately to realize that at peace and harmony within ourselves. And it's not the sort of harmony or calm or equanimity of mind that's dependent on circumstances. At the end of my two-week stay, I was asked to go and see one of our long-time participants at Hartridge, and that was Pierre Damu, Peter Wolfe, who had an accident a number of years ago, which left his sort of nervous system sort of immobile. It's like doesn't feel the body so fully, and moves around in a wheelchair. But it's one of the most uplifting spirits I've met, who never complains about his predicament or the conditions he has to put up with. And for the last 3 weeks he's been in Exeter Hospital because he can't swallow anymore. And even though he's living with it seems like his life function is slowly fading away, he's still very uplifting, cheerful character to meet. There's nothing about him that indicates that he might even be approaching the end of life. Some of the doctors that go around that ward visit him in the morning and say, "Oh, there's something wrong. You realize the seriousness of your condition, do you?" "Oh, yes, yes, yes." "Oh, but look around me, you know, there are other people here who've got much worse conditions than I have. Look, he's paralyzed over there." And these doctors just can't make head nor tail of it, how he doesn't, he's not preoccupied with himself. That's how it appears to me. So that was a very uplifting image for me to conclude my stay. And I felt very pleased to be able to spend an hour with him and tell him, oh, well, he's a blessing to everyone he meets. It's someone who's living the teachings. He's not lost. He's not preoccupied with his self-concern. Constantly thinking about the dire circumstances, his predicament, and I'm sure he would feel like pretty depressed. The Thai supporters at the Devan Vihara actually started to address him with the title Ajahn. And this is something that he just couldn't understand and was very reluctant to accept. And yeah. Now, Peter Wolf is someone who he teaches meditation. I think he's led meditation classes at his home. And but that's not what I think he's called Ajahn for. And I explained that in Thailand, you see, Ajahn is not strictly referring to monks who teach Dhamma, but Ajahn is a title of respect. It's not something, it's not a name, it's not a title that one is demands to be called once you've been in the order for 10 years, but it's a sign of respect. Even an artist in Thailand could be called an Ajahn. I wasn't aware of this until I met the artist who made the Buddha Rupa, a new one, at Chithurst about 10 years ago. I've forgotten his personal name, but he was referred to as Ajahn. So anyway, I was trying to explain to Peter that the Thai supporters are simply wishing to acknowledge their respect for his example and the way he lives. So when I see this in others, when I see this selfless conduct, selfless behavior like this, I find myself reminded of the purpose of this life. It's not to gain status. It's not to be clever in any area of expertise. It's to understand oneself, to be able to live in harmony, to live harmony in spite of the difficulties or complexities that we are experiencing in our lives. Oh, I've just written a few notes here because I also wanted to mention how the walk ended. Just as an example of how just wonderful incidents can, wonderful events can come out of the unexpected. Just to say the first 3 days of the walk was fairly good sunshine. Not full sun, it would have been far too much. I was able to find decent water from natural springs along the coast, and I noticed that the water emanating from limestone was far more reliable than that falling from the clay cliffs. But the last day, it was overcast and began to rain in the afternoon. And then that's when I asked Suvacho, "Now, why didn't you bring that umbrella I wanted?" um, Anyway, that morning I'd noticed from the top of one of the hillocks before Golden Cap, a quarter of a mile away, there was a lady who was walking a dog, and she'd stopped and was gazing up where we were, and something about the way she was standing seemed to say, am I seeing what I think I'm seeing? Two figures, two monastic figures on a hillside. And as it was, when the rain started in the afternoon, we made our way back to, we're making our way back to where we stayed the night before on Stonebarrow Hill, only to just avoid getting run over by a car. And then the lady stepped out of the car and said, well, would you like to come in for a cup of tea? I live in this cottage over here, and it just so happens that we are about to begin a workshop. Only the man who is going to teach has not been allowed into the country. It turns out to be the a move into life workshop. So, attracted by the prospect of a cup of tea, yes, we accepted, little knowing what we were letting ourselves in for. We still had some rain to go because the workshop was outside. However, after another hour, this is all I had in the rain, a movement workshop, and it's a great alternative to walking meditation. It makes our walking meditation very stiff, look very stiff and formal. And for those that know anything about the Move into Life organization, it's Suprepto Suryo Dharmo, and the lady who invited us for a cup of tea was Sandra Reeve, who's a fairly successful sort of movement therapist. And so that's where we were looked after for the night. It's amazing to be able to enjoy a shelter in this very characterful cottage while the storm was raging outside. So that was a wonderful walk, a wonderful end to a very uncertain walk. So just to recap, I mean, I found that time, the whole time, very helpful for me to be reminded to live harmony rather than to seek for life to be perfect for me. So I hope you'll remind me of that and next time you hear me complaining or fault-finding any time in the future. So I'll conclude. Yeah.
Sadhu Kahanta Pamasi.